Well, there you are drawing us into your, that's really one of the most important stage setting moments for the rest of the story. And we were talking here about the character Matthew.
Yes.
It's so difficult sometimes to talk about a book full of this kind of intrigue and all these little threads that come together without giving away the whole thing. I certainly enjoyed the book. I kind of gobbled it whole.
Thank you so much. Your questions are awesome.
Thank you. Now, I want to go back to that painting because you have lots of these little touchstones all through the book. Why did you choose this painting?
Well, for one thing, I grew up with a lot of paintings. My great uncle, Fred Hutchison, was a fairly well-known painter. He was friends with Clarence Gagnon, and they painted these wonderful scenes of rural Quebec, of Baie Saint-Paul, up and down the North Shore. And so I've always loved art. And I think there's a line in the book that pictures transcend words. So there's that very visual aspect which leads people into a kind of portal, into another dimension.
I remember that conversation. That's when they're talking about how civilizations going back so far had communicated because they would, and then would use symbols because that was such a way to make sure that whether you spoke a language or not, you could communicate the meaning. I have another question for you, which is about that painting. Does it exist? Is there an actual painting?
No.
So you have this painting. When you see the picture, what's in it?
There is the ship, an old ship, and two people on deck. And, you know, in part, I was influenced by C.S. Lewis. If anybody's read The Voyage of the Dawn Treader or seen the movie, it's a wonderful scene where the main characters in that book, it's their kids, are staring at this picture and they're saying, wow, what a great boat. It's almost like a real Narnian boat. And before they know it, they've actually gone into the picture. And C.S. Lewis, in turn, was influenced by George MacDonald and was just rereading a book of his, Lilith, where there's a similar image. So, and actually my professor at McGill University, under whom I did my honors thesis on MacDonald, George MacDonald's fantasy work, he actually studied with C.S. Lewis. So I kind of feel I'm in that lineage and it's had a great influence on me.
I'm going to dive into the imaginary versus reality because you are venturing into communities that do exist, some of them that you don't belong to. Now, how did you fact check your characters when you were dealing with First Nations communities?
That's a great question because I did emphasize that it's a historical fantasy. It's not even historical fiction, which is another genre. Because this book involves time travel, it gets into the fantasy realm. But I did feel I wanted to do as much research as I could about New France, about the early settlers, but I particularly wanted to be learning and sensitive and respectful of the First Nations who lived in the region. And as I said, it's now the Maliseet, it's a reservation, and they have a long history too. But going way back, there is evidence that the Mi'kmaq at one point were definitely living in that whole area. And I consulted Danielle E. Sear, who is a senior scholar at York University and research associate at the Mi'kmaq Maui-Omi Secretariat, excuse my pronunciation. And I also consulted with Josh Philbrick, who is a Mi'kmaq artist, a painter from the Gaspé. And I sent them each a draft of the book, the manuscript, and I said, please, you know, give me your insights. And so if there are any mistakes, they belong to me. And I've done my best to be as true as possible to what I understood with greatest respect and love. It's a beautiful place, and you can know that absolutely, this was their land. And, you know, I just wanted to honor the sense of nature, the environment, and beauty. I bring up the idea of the pipeline, which, you know, I saw it on CBC News. There were protests against it, and that marine terminal that was due to be built, or they were talking about it, it's now that got nixed. So there are a lot of current issues, too, you know, about being, you know, protecting the environment, the river, the belugas, who have actually have, they raise their children in just in that area of, yeah.
There's so much jammed into your book, but it is actually a really readable, good sit-down, travel through time. When you say historical fantasy, I'd actually never heard the term historical fantasy. And the step away from I thought sort of historical fiction included that, which was not necessarily historically 100% true to the moments in history. Like not, I don't even know, I don't want to say not authentic, because obviously so much of what you've built in this imaginary world actually did exist. We're going to have to unfortunately end our interview soon, but I wanted to ask one last question, which is for you, when the reader comes away from this book, what is it that you hope that they've taken with them?
Just a sense of the timelessness of nature and the beauty and how to be respectful of it, and of mostly, most importantly, the people who live on this planet. Also, the idea of the soul not dying. The soul is forever. The bodies and names may come and go. There is an idea throughout the book of, it's a kind of spiritual element, but it's not at all presented in a preachy way. Yeah, I also wanted to mention that the book is dedicated to Paul Ament.
Oh, yeah, and, we barely touched on that.
Yeah,
yes, it is dedicated to him, and he's been really important for you as a writer.
Yeah, and he's actually been on Breakaway many, many times. He passed away in 2015, and we did a tribute to him at the Westmount Public Library. And he wrote a wonderful series, eight books in it, called The Alford Saga. And the first three in particular are so relevant to today, Saroja, where we're celebrating 375 years of Montreal. And that is the third book, The Survivor, I believe it's called, is the one in which Jim works on the Victoria Bridge. And so he... You know, Paul is someone who encouraged me to write historical fiction, and actually he wrote a few sentences in this book. This book has been in the works for quite a few years, and he tweaked it here and there, and it was a great honor to know him, and he's a wonderful person, yeah.
Well, this is a very interesting book. We're going to have to tell our readers how they'll get their hands on it the next time, because we're not sure actually yet whether or not it has been accepted. But as soon as you do have it published, we're going to tell people how they can get their hands on it. Barbara, it's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much for accompanying me through my weekend and taking me through time.
Thank you for enjoying the book. And yeah, there'll be a website up and running by the fall. And also... if anybody, you know, hearing this wants to rush out and read some of my existing books, they are on Amazon and at La Maison Anglaise, The Magic Manuscript, Voyage to Avillion, The Magic Manuscript, The Nine Companions, Ludwig the Piano Playing Parrot and Other Tales, and Light in the Wind. So a pleasure to be here in Quebec City with you, Saroja.
Thank you so much, Barbara. I've been speaking with Barbara Burgess. She is the author of that list of books, which she just mentioned, but also the upcoming book, The Cocoona Caves and the Hidden Mural. We'll tell you more about it when it's released.